Hi, I'm Doug Gordon. This is Beta from Wisconsin Public Radio.
You know, we always called each other good fellas. Like you'd say to somebody, you're gonna like this guy, he's all right. He's a good fella, he's one of us. You understand? We were good fellas, wise guys.
That's Ray Liotta as gangster turned informant Henry Hill from Martin Scorsese's 1990 masterpiece, Goodfellas. 30 years later, it's still considered by many to be the greatest mob movie ever made. The picture is based on crime writer Nicholas Pileggi's exhilarating expose of Hill and mob life called Wise Guy. Glenn Kenny is a film critic whose work appears in the New York Times and on RogerEbert.com. He's also the author of Made Men, The Story of Goodfellas. Glenn spoke with nearly all of the principals involved in the film, and he echoes Pileggi's claim that the book or the movie wouldn't have been possible if not for the natural storytelling charisma of Henry Hill.
Any journalist who met Henry Hill would consider him a gift because he loved to talk and he had amazing stories and he spoke coherently. And the thing about him, he was introduced to Nick Pileggi by Ed McDonald, the prosecutor who plays himself in Goodfellas. And Pileggi and Hill hit it off, and Hill just wanted to talk. You know, he broke free of his FBI handler at the time he met Pileggi and gave Pileggi a number that his FBI handler would not have been happy for him to give Pileggi. And that started the relationship. And that started the book. You know, as Henry Hill's son, Greg Hill, puts it in his own book with his sister Gina on the run, Henry always had an angle. So to be approached by a journalist who says, do you want to do a book together? The first thing that occurs to Henry is the angle, which is money.
Really funny. Really funny. What do you mean I'm funny? It's funny, you know. It's a good story. It's funny. You're a funny guy.
What do you mean? You mean the way I talk? What?
You're just funny. It's the way you tell the story and everything.
Funny how? I mean, what's funny about it?
Tommy, no, you got it all wrong.
Anthony. He's a big boy. He knows what he said. What'd you say?
You're right.
Funny how?
You're funny.
I'm funny how? I mean, funny like I'm a clown. I amuse you. I make you laugh. What do you mean funny? Funny how? How am I funny?
You know how you tell the story? What?
No, I don't know. You said it. How do I know? You said I'm funny. Tell me what's funny.
We can't really talk about Goodfellas without talking about one of the most famous and one of the most memed scenes in the movie, perhaps also in movie history. I'm talking, of course, about Joe Pesci's How Am I Funny scene. What's the origin story behind this?
The How Am I Funny scene came out of conversations that Scorsese had with Joe Pesci. Pesci talks about seeing a scene like that unfold in real life. He was a nightclub entertainer for a long time. He's a singer. He's a very good singer. So Joe Pesci in a nightclub experience where he witnessed, I don't know if he was on the actual receiving end of the harangue, but yeah, he did witness a mobster take umbrage at the notion that he was amusing and talk about how am I funny. And this was something they discussed prior, I think, even to Pesci taking the role. But again, it's part of the reason Pesci took the role is through discussion with Scorsese and saying to Scorsese, if I can make this my own, if I can make it special, I'd like to do it. And this is something Scorsese encourages with his actors, especially, you know, when they've got the ability to do it. Joe Pesci is not, in terms of his training as an actor, he's not on the level with Robert De Niro. But his instincts, his ear, his ability to recall situations and his ability to emotionally put himself in these extreme situations makes him as good as any, very thoroughly trained performer.
The There are several unforgettable shots and pans in Goodfellas, perhaps most famously Henry Hill and Karen's walk into the Copacabana. This was the work of Scorsese's director of photography, Michael Ballhaus. How did he and Scorsese collaborate to create these iconic scenes?
Well, you know, it's interesting. Ballhaus was a very good collaborative cinematographer. He was used to working under pressure because he had a long period under his belt of having worked with the German director, Rainer Werner Fassbinder, who was both a maniac and a genius, and who worked very, very fast. Fassbinder made almost 40 feature films and died at the age of 37 or something. So Ballhaus was used to that. He was used to working fast and getting great results by working fast. He was also very good, and Barbara DeFina, the producer, says this, Joe Reedy, the first assistant director, he's also very good at reassuring the director he was working for. Now, if you look at the scene, and this is a spoiler, but you see they really don't need to go in the kitchen. They actually go in a circle. Christy Z created a breakaway wall that blocks the entrance of the club when they go down and they make the left, and then that breakaway wall is slid back. They put some crates in front of the wall of the entrance to make it look a little different. And they literally go in a circle because, and this has to do with math and how the camera is recording two dimensions in a three-dimensional space and what the audience sees. They see the camera move, but they don't see the actual setting move or not move. So you don't notice it unless you look for it. But once you figure it out, you actually can unsee it. It works fine, but it's just a fun thing to take notice of.
Let's talk a little bit about the music in Goodfellas. Scorsese is one of the masters of using pop music to score films, and he even raised his own bar with Goodfellas. What was his philosophy about creating a soundtrack to this film?
The way he perceives things, he often talks about how he wants the viewer to see as he sees. And I think also he wants the viewer to hear the music in his head. All of the songs there are songs that, you know, he had these songs in his head well before the film even shot. There's a story how he's working on the script with Nick Pileggi, and during a scene at the bar where Robert De Niro's character, Jimmy, is trying to decide whether or not he's going to kill Maury, he wants a shot of him thinking about that, and he told Nick to put in parentheses on the margin of the page the word cream. Pileggi told me, he said, you know, I'm a big Sinatra guy. I had no idea what he wanted that word there for. And it was because he wanted the song Sunshine of Your Love playing in the background. Now, how does he rationalize this? Because as he himself says, gangsters don't listen to psychedelic rock in the late 60s, early 70s. They were still listening to Jimmy Roselli and old songs from the old country. But they're in a bar. The bar has a jukebox. As long as he can come up with a rationale for it that, you know, hews to his sense of verisimilitude and reality, that's fine. But that's because in that scene, the song is coming out of the jukebox anyway. In the scene of Henry getting arrested, there's no source for where the music's coming from. It's all the music in Marty's head, but it's also the music in Henry's head. For instance, when he goes out in the morning and he thinks choppers are, you know, flying over his car, and there's one point where he's parked and he looks up at the sky and there's just this flash of blue sky and a little cloud, and there's just this snippet of Muddy Waters.
Everything gonna be all right this morning. Oh, yeah.
You know, and that's Henry's sense of relief that he doesn't see the chopper. Now, of course, the chopper comes back, and then the song, Mannish Boy, with its, you know, incredible stomping rhythm, comes back later in the sequence. But this is the soundtrack of the brain of the movie, and it's relentless during this scene. And then once the gun is put to his head at the very end of the scene and he's arrested, there's no more music in the rest of the movie at all until the Sid Vicious My Way. And the Sid Vicious My Way, too, this kind of deflation of this ostensibly ennobling Frank Sinatra song. That was in Scorsese's head. Barbara DeFina says they were talking about it while Scorsese was shooting Last Temptation of Christ. That's how far back that idea comes from. So here I think it's really working on all cylinders.
You mentioned the point where the music stops. And then the last, I think it is, what, the last 35, 40 minutes, there's no more music until the Sid Vicious version of My Way over the end credits. Why did Scorsese choose that particular moment to stop using music?
Because that's where the fun stops. That's where it's over. You know, everything that happens after that is panic and deflation. Panic over the fact that Karen has thrown away the drugs that he was going to sell to mortgage his, you know, last stand. Mm-hmm. Deflation when he goes to see Paulie and Paulie says, now I gotta turn my back on you.
But I got nowhere else to go, Paulie. You're all I've got, and I really, really need your help.
I really do. Take this. Now I gotta turn my back.
$3,200. That's what he gave me. $3,200 for a lifetime. Wasn't even enough to pay for the coffin.
It's arguably an on-the-nose metaphor. The music has stopped. The fun's over.
Yeah, the good times are over, yeah. What do you think about the way Scorsese uses voiceover in Goodfellas?
Oh, I think he's brilliant, and I think he uses it very well. And I've kind of revised my opinion about some use of voiceover in Scorsese overall. Voiceover is funny in Scorsese because he's not rigid about it. He has this freedom that I think he got from the influence of the French New Wave. People look at Goodfellas and they don't think, well, this is a movie that's had a big influence from Jules and Jim, the Truffaut movie. But it actually is. There's a huge Jules and Jim influence on that movie. And one of the things that I think Scorsese took from people like Truffaut is that you can kind of do anything you want, you know? You can do voiceover and then you can just drop it from the movie completely. To have Henry's voiceover is not sloppy writing. It's always underscoring a valid point that, you know, that the film's visuals get to. And it reveals a lot that the other portions of the film don't reveal.
This seemed like a perfect time in Glenn's answer about voiceovers to play a clip from Goodfellas to show what he was talking about.
Even before I first wandered into the cab stand for an after-school job, I knew I wanted to be a part of them. It was there that I knew that I belonged. And to me, it meant being somebody in a neighborhood that was full of nobodies. They weren't like anybody else. I mean, they did whatever they wanted. They double parked in front of a hydrant and nobody ever gave them a ticket. In the summer when they played cards all night, nobody ever called the cops. Must I
forever be? You get the feeling, you know, wow, you know, he loved these guys. And that's important. You know, he uses the voiceover incredibly constructively, and it definitely adds dimension.
Scorsese's longtime editor, Thelma Schoonmaker, edited Goodfellas. Can you talk
a
bit about...
Oh, boy, did she ever.
Yeah, can you talk a bit about Thelma and her editing style and philosophy?
She's more... Both Scorsese and Schoonmaker are primarily concerned with the emotional veracity of the moment as it's captured in the film, to the extent that they will sacrifice the convention of continuity in order to preserve it. And again, this is not a matter of indifference. She knows what she's doing. She knows when the cut doesn't match, and she's counting, Scorsese and Schumacher are counting on the fact that the emotional value of the moment will win out over this kind of continuity police type sensibility that a lot of people, unfortunately, now bring to their viewing of film.
30 years after it was made, how do you think Goodfellas holds up today?
Well, having watched it about 30 times over the course of writing the book, I have to say I still like it. It's a Pantheon film. It has a lot of different qualities. It's appalling. It's funny. It's sometimes appalling and funny at the same time, which is hard to do. It does have a morality, but the morality is something you have to meet it halfway in order to really appreciate. And it does say something, I think, about the kind of mutated version of the American dream that being a mobster represents, and also about the permutations of capitalism and greed that I think still resonate today. But also the vividness of the movie. The thing that Scorsese does that too few filmmakers have, but is what we're always looking for in a movie, is the ability to put life on screen. And when I talk about putting life on screen, I'm not necessarily saying realism per se, because there's a lot of stuff in Goodfellas that's not realistic, that's, you know, heightened. But to put life on screen, to give it blood, to make it live, and to bring that life and to make you feel like you're living that life, you're experiencing that life, or that you have a connection to that life. I think Goodfellas is one of those movies where every frame has life in it, and it imparts that life to the viewer in a very specific and unusual way throughout its running time.
Glenn Kenny, thank you very much.
All right, thank you. I really had a great time speaking with you.
Glenn Kenny is a film critic and the author of Made Men, The Story of Goodfellas. As always, you can find even more at wpr.org/beta. Well, that does it for this edition of Beta. Thanks to our guests, Sharon Dolan, Stephen Graham Jones, and Glenn Kenny. Beta is a production of Wisconsin Public Radio, and let me tell you a bit about the guys behind the scenes. There was Stevie Petals Gotcher, who did our music and technical work.
He's a good earner, but he's crazy. He's a cowboy. He's got too much to prove.
And then there was this guy, executive producer Adam T. Times Friedrich, who got that nickname because he's always golfing.
I know what I'm doing. I've got things organized with these guys.
Then there was the rest of our mob, you alphas. We'll see you next week. In the meantime, find other clowns to amuse you. I'm Dougie Menefergissimo Gordon. Be well.
You really are a funny guy!